I call this meeting of the Conference Committee on House File 5216 to order. There is a quorum present. The date is May 17th, 2024. Members, this is the Judiciary and Public Safety and Corrections Supplemental Budget Bill. Welcome to the other body, to representatives, to staff, the public being here today. Before we begin, we're going to just have everybody at the table quickly introduce themselves. So I'm Representative Kelly Moeller, and I represent District 40A. I live in Shoreview. Senator Letts?
I'm Ron Letts. I represent St. Louis Park, Minnesota, and Edina, and Hopkins.
Hello, everyone. My name is Claire Umover-Baton. I represent District 66 in the Senate. That includes parts of St. Paul, Roseville, Falcon Heights, and Lauderdale.
Senator Judy Seeberger, Senator for District 41, which includes the communities of Grant, Lake Elmo, Afton, the Lakeland Cities, Cottage Grove, and Hastings.
Bonnie Westland, Senate District 42. I represent Plymouth, the sliver of Maple Grove, and the city of Medicine Lake.
I'm Warren Limmer, State Senator. I have the rest of Maple Grove that Bonnie does not represent, as well as Western Hennepin County. I'm the ranking member on the Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee.
Priyanka Primo, nonpartisan Senate Counsel.
Chris Turner, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Jacqueline Clinton, Senate DFL Research.
Hello, Harry Kennedy, Republican Caucus Staff.
Ben Johnson, House Research.
John Walls, House Fiscal Staff.
John Hulquist, House Republican Public Safety Research.
Representative Patricia Mueller from 23B, Austin and the surrounding areas. Come and have some spam.
Sandra Feist, I represent 39B, which is the part of New Brighton that Representative Mueller does not represent, and Columbia Heights and St. Anthony.
Breon Curran, 36B, I represent Badness Heights, White Bear Lake, Birchwood Village, Gem Lake, and half of White Bear Township.
Zach Meinerts, House DFL Research.
Anna Borgerding, House Judiciary Committee Administrator.
Jamie Becker-Finn, Chair of Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee in the House, and I represent most of Roseville and half of Shoreview.
Ellen McDaniel, Committee Administrator in the House for Public Safety. All right. Again, thank you all for being here, and I'm looking forward to going through this bill. I think it is a really great bill where we've combined public safety and judiciary. I am really excited to go through it, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time commenting now, but I didn't know if my colleagues wanted to, the other chairs wanted to comment. Chair Letts?
It's a great bill. I hope we'll support it.
Chair Becker-Finn?
Thank you, Chair Moeller, and this might be my last, hopefully this is my last committee ever, so it's a good bill, and I hope we can all support it.
All right. So now we will have nonpartisan staff walk through the spreadsheet and the amendment that's been posted for the public. Mr. Walls, can you please walk us through the spreadsheet?
Madam Chair and members, you should have the spreadsheet in your packets, and I'll try to be brief. Beginning on page one, for the area of judiciary, we have on line one the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court was appropriated $5.663 million. $500,000 of that is for safe and secure courthouse grants, and $5.163 million was for enhancing cybersecurity. On line 13, you can see a reduction in the tails for the Supreme Court, and that is in the area of civil legal services. And if you move down to line 35, you'll see we established the Board of Civil Legal Aid, and so the Civil Legal Aid Board is created with money that is removed from Supreme Court, so they can be their own unique entity. Moving back up to line 19 on the district courts, we have expanded access for forensic examiners on line 22. The committee provided $21,268,000. There's a pay rate increase for forensic examiners to $136 per hour. That is $1,070,000 per year. That is on line 23. On line 24, ensuring access to court interpreters, the bill provides $5.16 million. On line 25, the interpreter rate increase to $75 an hour is $235,000 a year beginning in fiscal year 25. On line 26, court interpreter paid travel time. That is $170,000 a year beginning in fiscal year 25. On line 27, the bill provides $2.384 million for the juror deficit. And on line 26 begins a new program of $25,000 a year for trauma services. Flipping to the other side of the page, in the area of public safety, we have the Department of Public Safety on line 44. The committee provided money for a task force on domestic violence and firearms of $50,000 on line 47. $133,000 for a task force on traffic stops. Crime victim services grants of $9,467,000. $50,000 for a report on violence against Latina women. On line 51, therapy dogs for first responders receives $100,000. And a mediation and a restorative justice grant receives $50,000, and that is on line 52. On line 54, we have $7 million from the E911 fund, and this is for digital GIS school mapping. Moving down to line 62 in the Department of Corrections, the department requested an operating adjustment, and they received $7.9 million for this biennium and $14.2 million in tails. On line 70, the Clemency Review Commission is moved from the Department of Corrections to be a separate entity, and they take their $986,000 of funding from the department with them. That is on line 73. On line 79, we have $150,000 for the MMB Office of Addiction and Recovery Task Force. And Madam Chair, if you go down to line 98, which is the overall total of general fund spending, it's $53.9 million in the current biennium and $17,220,000 in tails. And I will pass it over to my counterpart, Chris Turner, for some details that are in Article 1.
Thank you. Mr. Turner.
Yes, Madam Chair and members. Article 1 basically implements the spreadsheet, so I'll review it pretty quickly here. Section 1 is the preamble of the article, defines terms and effective dates. Section 2 contains the appropriations to the Supreme Court, which has two general fund initiatives that were on the spreadsheet. Section 3 contains the appropriations to the district courts, which has seven general fund initiatives. Moving to page 3, Section 4 contains appropriations to the Department of Public Safety and its related divisions. Subdivision 1 is the total appropriation summary. Subdivision 2 is the appropriation to the Public Safety Administration Division. It has one general fund initiative, Task Force on Domestic Violence and Firearms. Subdivision 3 is the appropriation to Driver and Vehicle Services Division, which has one general fund initiative, Motor Vehicle Registration Compliance Working Group. And Subdivision 4 is the appropriation to the Office of Justice Programs Division, which has four general fund initiatives. We move, there's one last subdivision on page 6 to the Department of Public Safety, the Emergency Communications Network Division, which has one initiative, the digital GIS mapping for schools. Unlike the rest of the bill, this is not a general fund provision. It's funded from the E911 account in the Special Revenue Fund. Moving to page 7, section 5 is the appropriation for the Department of Corrections operating deficiency. Section 6 is the fiscal year 25 appropriation to the newly independent Clemency Review Commission. The bill cancels an identical amount from the DOC budget in sections 12 and 13. Then Section 7 is an appropriation to MMB for the task force on holistic and effective responses to illicit drug use. We have Section 8, which is a biennial transfer from the general fund to the disaster assistance contingency account. The transfer takes place at the end of the biennium if a general fund surplus exists and the DACA balance is less than $50 million. This section caps the DACA account balance and therefore any potential transfer at $50 million. On page 8, Section 9 cancels civil legal services base funding under the Supreme Court beginning in fiscal year 26. The base is reinstated to civil legal services as an independent board in Section 15. Then Section 10, Paragraph C makes the urban, is a public safety policy request, makes the urban search and rescue and Minnesota Air Rescue teams eligible to receive reimbursements from the non-responsible party fund for hazardous material response. Section 11 on page 10, this is a long section. It's pages 10 to 20. Page 12 contains the new language, which extends the fiscal year 25 appropriation for Ramsey County Youth Treatment Homes made in last year's bill to June 30th, 2026. Then we move all the way to page 20. Sections 12 and 13 cancel the fiscal year 25 appropriation for the Clemency Review Board from the Department of Corrections, and has been stated earlier, an identical amount is appropriated in the newly independent Clemency Review Commission in Section 6. Then we move to page 22. Section 14 is a one-time fiscal year 24 transfer from the general fund to the disaster assistance contingency account, provided that a surplus exists at the end of this fiscal year. DACA is capped at $50 million, so the transfer can exceed $50 million. And for the record, the current DACA balance is $28 million. Section 15 reinstates the base funding in fiscal year 26 for the newly independent State Board of Civil Legal Aid. Section 16 is the implementation language for the report preventing violence against Latina women and queer Latines in Minnesota. Section 17 on the next page is the implementation language for the youth support services grants to Anoka, Hennepin, and Ramsey counties. Rather than providing a direct general fund appropriation, the conference committee redirects $500,000 in fiscal year 26 from the community crime and violence prevention account in the special revenue fund. And then moving on to page 25, the last section, section 18, is the implementation language for the digital geographic information system mapping for schools. Once again, that's funded by the E911 account in the special revenue fund. And that, Madam Chair, is the end of Article 1.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members, I'm going to do a walkthrough of the public safety related articles. Those are Articles 2 through 11. Article 2 starts on page 26. I'm not going to go by section. I'm going to explain what's in each article. Article 2 establishes a uniform definition of the term victim in statutes that address the rights of victims, makes certain data related to reimbursement for the cost of sexual assault exams private. It removes donations and gifts from the list of items that can be deducted from reimbursement paid to a victim of a crime. It modifies and increases victim notification and involvement in end-of-confinement review committees, and it modifies how sexual assault primary prevention services grants are to be awarded. Madam Chair, I'm going to move to Article 3. Article 3 begins on page 39. This article contains multiple provisions related to law enforcement. It provides limitations on what a peace officer can ask a person who's pulled over for a traffic or vehicle registration stop. Permits railroads in Minnesota to employ peace officers and establishes limits and requirements related to those officers. It provides that the odor of cannabis may not serve as the sole basis for a peace officer to search a motor vehicle, its occupants, or its contents. It addresses who must conduct investigations for officer-involved deaths and requires disclosure of certain information in cases where the prosecutor determines that there is no basis to file a charge. It changes the name of the Ensuring Police Excellence and Improving Community Relations Advisory Council. It prohibits the Post Board from certifying law enforcement training courses that are related to the term excited delirium. It authorizes Anoka County to build a jail and criminal justice center in any other city in Anoka County and for the sheriff to keep an office there. And it provides that when the Post Board receives a complaint that is within its power to enforce, the board may order an appropriate law enforcement agency to conduct an inquiry and submit a report. Article 4 begins on page 48. This article contains provisions that are related to criminal justice. It requires the reviser of statutes to annually compile and publish a list of collateral sanctions relating to criminal convictions. These are loosely in Chapter 609B right now. This would repeal 609B, which many people feel is out of date at the moment. It provides that children who are under the age of 13 may not be adjudicated as a delinquent child or juvenile petty offender, but will be considered a child in need of protection or services. It limits the situations in which a child may be subjected to DNA analysis, prohibits certain entities from having policies preventing or discouraging and reporting of child maltreatment, and makes doing so a misdemeanor. It amends the law on bringing a petition for post-conviction relief by modifying an exception to the general two-year time limit. It expands the Good Samaritan law to cover persons acting in concert with someone who's making an emergency call to report a drug overdose. It amends the expungement law to modify some of the crimes that qualify for automatic expungement and makes some technical changes. It provides venue for certain criminal sexual conduct crimes that involve victims who were mentally incapacitated. It limits law enforcement from using certain deceptive custodial interrogation practices against juveniles. And it amends the standard by which a person previously convicted of second-degree felony murder under an accomplice liability theory may seek relief. I'm going to move to Article 5. Article 5 starts at page 73. It expands references to search warrants in the DWI laws to include warrants from adjacent states, redefines some terms in the public safety chapter of law. It authorizes the Department of Public Safety to use up to 10% of youth intervention program appropriations for administrative costs. It requires a company providing guards or other personnel to transport a person arrested on a warrant to have a protective agent license. It establishes a working group, several working groups, in fact, a working group on motor vehicle registration and compliance, a task force on holistic and effective responses to illicit drug use, and a task force on domestic violence and firearm surrender. And it expands the permitted uses for a 2023 grant to Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Article 6 begins on page 91. Contains technical changes related to aggravated witness tampering, limits on the length of probation, and organized retail theft. It authorizes peace officers to refer individuals suspected of committing some controlled substances offenses to treatment. It specifies that the use of force is not authorized against someone because of the person's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. The article requires reporting on the use of the Veterans Restorative Justice Act. It allows revocation of probation if a person violates the condition of a stay of adjudication. It clarifies that certain violations of crimes prohibiting hiring a minor to engage in prostitution. The article establishes an enhanced penalty for reporting a fictitious emergency response to the home, that triggers a response rather, to the home of an elected official, judge, prosecutor, or employee of a correctional facility. And finally, the article establishes a crime for selling human remains. Article 7 is on page 106. This article contains policies related to predatory offenders. It establishes procedures to allow conservators and others to assist a person with predatory offender registration and creates new procedures to verify the address of some predatory offenders. It makes changes to some of the offenses that require registrations and violations that restart the registration period. Permits disclosure of information about level two offenders to individuals who are likely to visit the offender's home on professional business, and also requires the Department of Corrections to consider an offender's proximity to certain locations when placing a level three offender in the community. It permits the extension of certain juvenile cases to permit the juvenile to complete sex offender treatment. Article 8 has provisions related to corrections. It starts at the bottom of page 118. Allows the department to release certain information about where an offender will reside to victims, requires facilities licensed by the DOC to release information about emergencies and unusual occurrences to the DOC, also requires county and regional correctional facilities to report on communications contracts related to calls and other communications by incarcerated individuals. It amends the membership of the State Correctional Facilities Security Audit Group and the Healthcare Peer Review Committee. Contains a variety of provisions related to education, including prohibiting contracts with certain institutions, allowing participation in post-secondary education in place of, to satisfy work requirements. It allows the Board of Regents to request that at least one campus be approved to provide the intensive comprehensive law enforcement education and skills training. Requires the Commissioner of Corrections to coordinate with the Commissioner of Higher Education to assist incarcerated persons with student loans. And it requires the Commissioner of Corrections to provide outreach and correctional facilities to inform incarcerated persons about the federal Fresh Start program. The article allows a medical director's designee to act in place of the director in certain situations. It amends the use of force standard for corrections officers, allows supervised release board to meet in closed session to review a victim's statements. It amends the eligibility for the challenge incarceration program, makes several changes to the Minnesota Rehabilitation and Reinvestment Act. It authorizes the release of data for sentence adjustments. And it makes technical changes related to a repealed law and extends the period of time during which the DOC will support the Cannabis Expungement Board. Articles 9, 10, and 11 will go faster. Article 9 starts on page 143. This article establishes a new grant program that allows restitution to be paid to victims on behalf of a juvenile if the juvenile participates in a restorative justice program. Article 10 makes changes to provisions related to orders for protection and harassment restraining orders. That article begins on page 157. Changes require notification of the custodian of a petitioner's minor children, allow for service of some orders to be by mail, requires the sheriff to make reasonable efforts to serve orders, and requires probation officers and other similar individuals to provide information to assist an officer in attempting to locate a respondent to complete service. Article 11 is on page 171. This article creates a state board of civil legal aid. Currently, the Supreme Court is responsible for funding and supporting civil legal aid, and this creates an independent entity that's similar to the Board of Public Defense or the state guardian ad litem board. For the judicial and civil related provisions, I'd ask that you'd recognize Ms. Primo.
Ms. Primo.
Madam Chair and members, I will go through the remaining articles. Article 12 begins on page 175. This provides for the privacy and security of personal information about judges, judicial branch employees, and administrative court judges and employees. It permits judicial officials to file an affidavit requesting removal of personal information and provides for civil and criminal enforcement. Article 13 begins on page 180. This contains the judicial branch's policy provisions. It modifies definitions for court examiner and provides employment protections for jurors and modifies other policies and procedures governing the collection of court debts, and money deposited with the court. Article 14 begins on page 183. This modifies provisions related to public defenders, including membership on the State Board of Public Defense, changes removal of this procedures for removal of the state public defender and the chief appellate public defender, as well as billing for services. This article also changes the name for the Competency Attainment Board. Article 15, titled Civil Law, begins on page 193. This contains several different provisions, including changes to the Safe at Home program, an increase in the conciliation court jurisdictional amount limit. It amends laws related to homeowners associations regarding prohibitions on in-home daycares. It amends the guardianship law regarding immunity for guardians and when a guardian may petition for resignation. It amends when the amount of damages collected in a civil litigation related to the collateral source rule, and it amends the current statute governing court fee waivers for litigants who can proceed without payment of fees, with payment of court fees or other court costs. Article 16 begins on page 211. This contains many provisions related to contracts for deeds. This article makes changes related to requirements imposed on investor sellers, recording requirements, requirements for specific notices and disclosures to purchasers. Article 17 contains several provisions related to state government. This article amends laws related to data privacy for the Office of Administrative Hearings, as well as other provisions related to the Office of Administrative Hearings. and the state information technology policy, including a requirement that public agencies report cybersecurity incidents to MNIT. It also contains provisions related to the process for selecting an archaeologist, qualified anthropologist, or other expert to conduct work on probable American Indian burial sites. Article 18 begins on page 257, and this contains the Uniform Public Expression Protection Act. This is a uniform law designed to prevent slap lawsuits or strategic lawsuits against public participation, which are generally viewed as being in opposition to First Amendment rights, and this provides a mechanism to dismiss them in a quicker fashion. That concludes the walkthrough for this DE.
Thank you. Thanks again to our staff. So next we will move the DE, and then we can go through amendments, and then we will have final discussion on the bill. Senator Latz, would you like to move the A240352 amendment to House File 5216?
So moved.
All right. And so before we take action on that motion, we'll start with the amendments. I do have an author's amendment, the A33 amendment. I will move the A33 amendment to the A240352 amendment. And just so everybody knows what the A33 amendment is, we have a section in here, or the references on line 1.3 to 1.7 relate to the GIS mapping. We just had a couple changes that we wanted to make to the GIS mapping provisions of the bill. And then we have on line 1.8 and 1.9, we're deleting the sections in the bill related to catalytic converters because that ended up being in a different bill. And then we had on line 1.10 a change related to the new parole board and how frequently those requests are going to be made. And then a shall to may on line 1.11. Any discussion to the A33 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Next, we will move to the A22 amendment. This amendment is just a technical fix to an incorrect statutory citation in the bill. Any discussion to the A22? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. The next amendment is the A21 amendment. And Chair Becker Finn, I believe that's yours.
Yep. So I will move the A21 amendment. We caught a drafting error, and this also reflects the agreed upon language between the Board of Public Defense and the Teamsters. It is cost neutral and is mostly just updating statutes that are no longer needed.
All right, thank you. Any discussion to the A21?
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, the last few amendments I do not have at my place setting, and I was hoping someone could at least give me the amendment of the one we're on now.
So, Senator Limmer, in the green packet, is it behind the actual bill? That's where mine was. It was behind the bill. Sorry, I'll give you a minute to get it. Just so the public knows, too, they are posted online.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, any discussion to the A21? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A24. We're just getting that passed out here. All right, and I believe, Senator Umu-Verbaten, this one is yours. Please explain the A24.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first change that you see on line 1.3 of the amendment just extends the time that the youth support services grants would be available. The second change on line 5.4 of the amendment extends the amount of time for the grantees to submit their reports to the Department of Public Safety. This is all based on feedback from the department. And then the last change on line 1.5 just changes the date that the communication services reports that are coming from local correctional facilities are when they are due to they are due to the Department of Corrections February 28th. This changes the date that the Department of Corrections submits their report to the legislature to March 21st.
Thank you. And this one is also posted online, so people watching at home can see that. Any discussion to the A24? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. All right, next we have the A19 amendment, and I think Representative Mueller, this is your amendment. To your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the A19 amendment, this is deleting on section 1 of page 39, which is the traffic stop language. I have with me a letter from the all the law enforcement agencies talking about how this language has been, and I know that this language has been worked on, and I know that you have taken several amendments on it. However, they have talked about how it is essential to recognize that law enforcement practices and procedures have been carefully developed and vetted by both the community and by law enforcement professionals. This language is honestly in search of a solution, in search of a problem. Many police officers and law enforcement officers believe that this type of language will be used by defense attorneys to have to do innumerable challenges to a stop. Did the officer read the say something loud enough, clearly enough? What happens when a person is fluent in another language? This is seriously and ambiguously in the law. This type of change in law enforcement behavior should be done through post board. If we're going to have the post board, this is the type of thing that should be brought through and vetted through the post board. And so I know there are lots of concerns about this, and I do know that this language was revised and adopted in Ways and Means, but still, it's important for us to be able to look at this now and understand that this language is something that is highly opposed by our law enforcement. So I would ask that we would adopt this, and let's let this language go through the proper channels of making sure that it's being adopted through post board instead.
Thank you. And I'm going to recommend that we oppose this amendment. I know you said that you believed it's a solution in search of a problem. We do know we have a problem with disparities in traffic stops in our state. The data on that is clear. And for me, when I think about Philando Castile and the dozens, I think it was over 40 times that he had been pulled over for very minor things, that's problematic. And so there is a problem. I will say that some of the concerns you raised have been addressed with the language as it's been amended. There are on lines 39.29 to line 40.1, it does clearly state that the failure to comply with this section is not the basis for exclusion of evidence or dismissal of a charge or citation. This is pretty watered down now, and we did that in order to really give the opportunity to comply with this. I would say there really aren't a lot of consequences for not complying, because we really want to give law enforcement the chance to use this. I will also say that it's limited to those stops that are in Chapter 168 and 169, for example, stops for things like equipment violations or having air freshener tags. So it's pretty limited to begin with. And the purpose is we really want to encourage those positive interactions. So when an officer pulls someone over and no longer says, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" which that automatically creates a defensive scenario, it will be, "I've pulled you over because your taillight is out or because you were speeding." That's really what we're trying to get at with this language. I will also say that other states have this, and I believe in committee we talked about this. Rhode Island, I think, has had it since maybe 2014 or 2015, and I'm not aware of any problems as a result of that. But again, because of the version that we have in front of us, I really feel like this is an opportunity to try to make these stops more positive, and I'd love to give this a chance to work. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Oh, yeah, Chair Latz.
I agree with what you have said. I also oppose this motion.
Thank you. Closing remarks, Senator Mueller.
Wow.
Representative Mueller.
thank you.
Didn't mean to insult you.
I mean, really.
Oh, those are fighting words.
This happened out loud. You know, normally it's Mueller and Mueller that gets missed. Now I just get to be in a different body. I don't know. All right. Well, I really appreciate this. And honestly, I do appreciate the fact that we have looked at this language and that we have done some different things with it. I still maintain the fact that, you know, even the fact that it's limited, we are going against what police officers have been trained and how that training has been vetted by through so much. Now that it's being limited to equipment violations, an officer who is trying to decide does it fall into this or that or whatnot, I really think that this is going to cause more confusion. I don't know if this language was vetted by transportation, knowing that this is for traffic stops, if that's what it's for. But it's one of those things where I think that, you know, they get trained a certain way. Now we're going to create confusion, create ambiguity in this. And I still am listening to what police officers are telling me, which is they are concerned how this is going to be used against them when someone is brought in and that defense attorneys are going to say that this wasn't done correctly. And so it's just going to create more confusions and more problems with that. And so, again, I would ask for support of the amendment, but I thank you very much.
Thank you. All those in favor of the A-19 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A-20, and I believe Representative Mueller, this is your amendment as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before I actually talk about the A-20, I did want to ask some questions, if that's okay, to Senator Latz. If that's okay?
Yep, that's fine. Go ahead.
So one of the reasons why I have this amendment is because, and Chair Beckerfend and I have talked about some of the queasiness that we have about this program altogether, simply because the procedure that it went through in the House. When we listened to this provision in the House, I, as a public school teacher, had some serious concerns about data privacy, knowing that these are children, knowing that this is a school where children were. What happens if this gets into the wrong hands? I was told this was going to go to judiciary, and according to Chair Beckerfend, it never did. Also was told, I urged the people who brought this that it should go to education, and it never went through education. So I'm concerned how this has been vetted. So, Senator Latz, I just wanted to know, this provision, since it showed up in here, what is the process, what committees did this stop through in the Senate?
Madam Chair, Representative Mueller, the bill was carried by Senator Seeberger, so she might have a clearer idea of its path.
Senator Seeberger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mueller, this bill was heard in Judiciary in the Senate and had opportunity for testimony and questions, as any bill would, that would come to Judiciary and Public Safety.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And Senator Seeberger, I just wanted to know, is this, as it has to do with schools, is this something that went through education, knowing that there are special considerations that we have to look at in school settings, knowing that we're dealing with minors, knowing that this is going to be, from what I understand, a very detailed map of a facility that our children are at 8 hours a day?
Senator Seeberger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, the chairs of both Education Policy and Finance declined to hear this bill.
Representative Mueller.
Well, thank you, Chair Mueller. That's concerning to me. That's a concerning thing. There are special circumstances for our schools that we need to take in consideration. And I think it's important to know that in this unique cross-section, that this should be vetted by not only public safety, which I know that this is going to be used for, judiciary when it comes to data privacy, which it was not heard in the House, but that it should also go to education. Some of the advocates that came and talked to me said that, you know, wanted to know if I would support this, and I asked if they were going to plan on going to education, and they said, well, that chair of chair finance was not offered to be an informational hearing, and that was something that, to me, didn't allow public testimony, didn't allow people to vote on this, doesn't allow proper vetting. And so by offering this amendment does not mean that the idea isn't good, because I believe that, especially on our side of the aisle, we think that we should have all the tools possible for public safety. At the same time, knowing that there is a special and unique intersection between public safety, judiciary, and education, all of those stops need to happen. And so I would encourage that we would shelve this. It's not ready. It's a lot of money, and I know it's not coming from the general fund, but it's a lot of money, and I really think that this is something that should go through the proper channels in order to be spending $7 million. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further discussion? All right. I'm going to recommend a no vote on this. And I did check, and it's my understanding that there are a lot of school groups that are represented around here, and it's my understanding that the stakeholders did talk to those groups, that they're fully aware of this bill, that they didn't have concerns with it as long as it was paid for. They didn't have to pay for it, and it wasn't required. So I mean, I definitely understand and hear you, but did want to make sure that we checked in with that. And just so people know, this is really a good bill. It is to make our schools safer, so that if there's an emergency in a school, law enforcement knows exactly where in the school building the emergency is, so that they can respond very quickly to that emergency. And so I think it's too important of a bill to shelf and to delay. And so that's the reason why I'd recommend a no vote. Any further discussion on this? Any closing remarks? Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And members, well, I have a couple of things to say to that. You know, I understand the school groups are here, but again, public comments with the school group is what we need to be doing, and that's what happens in the education community. I think it's interesting, and I won't impugn any motives, but I find it interesting. They're like, oh, we're fine with it as long as we don't have to pay for it. Know exactly where the emergency is? Yes, that's exactly what we want to be able to do. But then you also know exactly where, if getting into the wrong hands, this is know exactly where someone could go as well. This is very detailed mapping. This is very detailed information that, used with bad actors, this could be very dangerous. We recognize this because of the amendment that you already passed, the amendment that we already passed. It's something that we have already amended because we're seeing the vulnerabilities in it. And so, again, I'd recommend a green vote on this, simply because, not because it's a bad idea, but because we really should have the full transparent process of it with the testimony. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. All those in favor of the A20 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A18, and I believe Representative Mueller, this is yours as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and definitely feel like I'm doing a lot of pain. All right. So I'm bringing this amendment on behalf of because of the fact that we are seeing, most recently, that we have judges that have a misunderstanding on why we have use of force legislation. If we have use of force legislation, but we aren't going to consider it in a probable cause hearing, then what is the point? This amendment would ensure that if we have a strong, if we have someone who is gone, been told that they have appropriate use of force, that it has been justified, that the judge has to take that in consideration during a probable cause hearing. They cannot just say, that's for a jury to decide. We are not strictly shirking the jury process. We are simply saying the judge is required to look at this, and we are holding activist judges accountable. This is something that we are seeing is incredibly necessary in light of recent events, and I think that this type of assurance language in this amendment would be incredibly timely. And so, Madam Chair, I would ask for you to support the A18.
Chair Becker-Fenn.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, and I would recommend a no vote on this amendment. Specifically, I believe it to be unconstitutional, requiring the court how to do their jobs as well as applying to all pending prosecutions, I believe would be against Article 3, the division of powers within our Constitution. It also hasn't been vetted whatsoever. You know, this isn't language we discussed in committee at all, and so I would recommend a no vote for both those reasons.
Further discussion? Chair Latz.
Madam Chair, I would concur with Chair Becker-Fenn on this. Not only does it raise constitutional questions and has the added infirmity of not having properly gone through the process, which I understand to be important to Representative Mueller from the previous amendment, but it would effectively tie the hands of the judges that are making probable cause determinations. Which to me is not really the purview of the legislature. That's the basis for a constitutional problem here, but it's pretty fundamental to fairness in our justice system that the judges have the authority granted to them under the Constitution to make these determinations. So I agree that we ought to vote against this amendment.
Further discussions? Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, and again, I feel like language like this could bring some assurances as we are seeing judges that have been activists, and that we really need to make sure that when it is been shown that the use of force has been justified and yet that has been ignored, that we really need to be able to have that be considered. So I again would ask for support of the amendment.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Limmer.
Thank you. Representative Mueller, there's no one in the room more interested in holding judges accountable to enforce our statutes. Over the years, I've certainly tried to make that a reality in our statute books, but I do have to agree that this definitely is a violation of separation of powers and also raises constitutional concerns. So with regret, I'm going to have to oppose your bill, but in spirit, or your amendment, but in spirit, I think the legislature needs to focus on why judges and prosecutors are not following the statutes that we put out for them and using the terms of discretion to almost a wholesale basis. Thank you for your amendment, but I cannot support it at this time.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And in light of some of the comments that are hearing, again, in the truncated time that we have to do this, knowing that this is a problem that we're seeing and that we want to address, and knowing that this language is probably not the best, I'm going to withdraw this.
All right. The motion, the A18 amendment has been withdrawn. The next amendment is the A17, and Representative Mueller, you are on a roll to the A17, please.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, and hopefully this might be my last one. All right, so this amendment has been brought to me by my colleagues from the Judiciary Committee, and if you look on the second page of the amendment here, or sorry, page 3, you'll see the language. Last year, the Public Safety Judiciary Omnibus Bill Conference Committee made changes that make it appear that a proposed statewide bias speech registry had been removed from the bill, but the bill still provides funding to support staff and a database for creating a bias registry, but it's just under a different name. This amendment just clarifies that the information held in any database or collection at the Department of Human Rights does not include a government collection of speech. The language defining protected speech is taken from House File 3309, which we passed unanimously on March 11th. And so I'd ask for, as an assurance language, I'd ask for support of A17.
Thank you. Chair Becker Finn.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, and I would recommend a no vote. I know it has been a relitigation session of everything that we passed last year, but although it may have been fun for folks to spin this in all kinds of ways last year, that isn't actually the law that we passed, and this is unnecessary, as well as this also not being anything that's been vetted at any point. Up to this point this year. So I would recommend a no vote on the A17.
Further discussion on the A17? All right. Closing remarks, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. It's my understanding that I believe that Representative Niska had offered this as amendment at one point in time. And so this language could have been at least looked at and vetted through the judiciary. Not being on the Judiciary Committee, I'm not saying that I'm right on that. I'm just saying that that's what was standing. And so I keep staring at people. And so, but this is just assurance language, again, trying to make sure that there is no such database or registry that can be held against people and that would have some sort of protected speech that is... that would be a database that would be used against our citizens. I would urge support of A17.
All those in favor of the A17 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. That is all we had for printed amendments in front of us. Are there any other amendments? Right. I'm not seeing that we have any other amendments, and so I want to give members an opportunity to speak to the bill as a whole. Who would like to start? Anybody?
Madam Chair.
Yep, Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, being a member of the Senate, this morning I had a very nice, cordial discussion with Chairman Latz. And he told me that the upcoming bill that we have on the judiciary finance bill would be coming up. But as you can tell, he warned me that it was a little more plump than it left the Senate. And I understand it's now got a great number of policy elements in it that we are now to consider. There's a reason why I do not have any amendments before me to present to this committee, and that's because of the shortness of time. I was not told that we were going to have a conference committee. I was not told that individuals that were pre-conferring this legislation had added or had agreed to add, I counted 67 or 68 policy proposals into the finance bill and was told that due to the shortness in time remaining in the legislative session that we really had no choice. That may be true, but nevertheless, representing my caucus, I did not have time to prepare an amendment or a series of amendments on behalf of my caucus like the members of the House have. I would tend to think, Madam Chair, that there's an element of fairness that certainly can be raised. I did appreciate the conversation with Senator Latz. It was a positive conversation, but nevertheless, there's something wrong with our system when one caucus of one chamber does not have the same amount of time to prepare amendments to affect legislation. And so I make this statement out of protest to what has been going on, or the lack of what's been going on at this time regarding this bill. The Senate has a tradition of passing Senate Judiciary and Public Safety bills primarily from a fiscal or a financial funding perspective. We have, during the course of the Senate debate, there were a few amendments that were policy-oriented, that were accepted, but nevertheless not to the scale of what the House has provided and seemingly will be accepted by this conference committee. So I just leave it at that, Madam Chair, out of protest that the Senate Republican Caucus did not have an opportunity to prepare for this particular finance bill with policy amendments.
Right. Any further discussion? Chair Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just in response to Senator Limmer, with whom I have a good professional relationship, and we have candid conversations as much as we possibly can about what's happening in the Senate, and specifically within the Judiciary and Public Safety Finance and Policy area, because Senator Limmer and I have, over the course of time, traded the gavel and being the minority lead on the committee. And as he knows, and I think a lot of people know, I try to adhere as much to process as I can. I think process is important. Unfortunately, this year, I had to make a judgment call about how we were going to proceed with this. We lost a couple of weeks' worth of Judiciary Committee hearing time, some through circumstances well beyond our control when there were with the shootings down in Burnsville and the memorial service. And so we weren't able to meet and get our work done in our normal timely fashion. And then, quite frankly, we have spent so much time on the Senate floor on issues that, to me, are at best peripheral to the legitimate and smooth functioning of the Senate, and then also an inordinate amount of time, even on issues that are directly, appropriately before the Senate in great detail, to the point that it's just, frankly, sucked up so much time on our Senate floor that we don't have the ability to do everything we'd like to do in the usual process. So there are too many important things here, I think, to leave them on the table because, which in effect, and I do not mean this to reflect on Senator Limmer because I do not believe this is his approach to legislating or conducting a business on the Senate floor, to ignore what's happened there and to not be able to move forward with this would have rewarded obstructionism by the minority caucus in the state Senate. And if I have to make a choice, I'm choosing this route. It's one with some sadness and trepidation, but I felt I had no alternative. So I will do my best, as I have, to honor process wherever I possibly can. But this is where we're at. I had to make a judgment call, and I'd rather be able to move forward in this manner than not move forward at all, or tie up the Senate another 12 to 15-hour debate, which would end up picking through every word, semicolon, and paragraph heading on the Senate floor, which to me is not productive or meaningful. But instead as obstructionist, and I'm not going to be a party to that. So, thank you.
Representative Kern.
Thank you, Chair. And I just, want to center our conversation about the great work that went into the bill that we have before us today. There are so many excellent provisions by so many folks both in the Senate and the House. And I just truly, as a member of this committee and public safety and judiciary in the House, I'm just so proud of everyone's work here. I have to say my favorite quote, that when we know better, we do better, Maya Angelou. And I think this bill is a perfect reflection of that. And that is the work that we do in public safety and judiciary. We continue to implement things that we know and we know we can do better. This bill places an emphasis on those most often who are most at risk. And it also places an emphasis on those most often left behind. And I just, I'll wrap quickly by just thanking the committee again for all the work done to protect judicial judges and judicial staff information. I think this is something that the state of Minnesota should be very proud of, especially considering the rise of doxing and violence committed against those in our judiciary branch. And so I just want to thank folks for that support. And thank you, Chair Mueller and Chair Becker Finn, for the support on the House side throughout session for all of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, you went over there? All right, yep, Senator Umu Verbaeten.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to thank all of the chairs, Chair Mueller, Chair Latz, Chair Becker-Finn, on the budget piece here. I know it was tough to find room for everything that we wanted to do, especially considering the really deep needs that we have for our victim services right now. And hopefully we can come back next year and have some more permanent funding in place, because there are those really deep needs. But to have found that room for the report on violence against Latina women and queer Latinas, the task force on domestic violence and firearms, the task force on traffic stops, the youth support services, where we had to get a little creative there, but are making sure that that funding is available, the mediation and restorative justice grant. I just think those are really great things, and appreciate you all making room for that. I'm also really excited about the provisions we have in here that are looking at sort of the intersections between incarceration and higher education, and the support for both incarcerated students and incarcerated borrowers, and establishing some best practices there in our Department of Corrections. Really excited about the bill to ban the use of deception for juveniles, and I hope we can continue to work on that in the future. Those necessary fixes that we made to the felony murder, aiding and abetting law, and then requiring the independent investigations for those use of force incidents. There's some really good provisions in here, and love being a part of this committee. I'm really happy to be a part of this conference committee, and thank everybody for their work and collaboration. It's been great.
Thank you. Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, I do want to note one provision that is in here which falls short of, I think, all of our goals, but which is going to have to be worked on in the interim, and that is the provision to protect the privacy and security of our judicial branch judges and staff, not only the state court, but the federal bench as well. I've been in communication, as some of others of us have as well, with state court judges and with the federal bench about this, and they're legitimately uncomfortable, nervous, scared for the safety of themselves and their families. We take some valuable steps here, but one thing we were not able to do at this time is address the public nature of property records. We really struggled with how to make this work. Senator Limmer carried the bill this year to address this. We received a lot of practical feedback from the county recorders and the Land Title Association, as well as the State Bar Association, about the administrative difficulty, expense, and uncertainty how to proceed with regard to making historic property records and existing property records private or not public. We know in that regard this bill is going to fall short, and it's not without effort to try. I have had direct conversations with a representative from the Bar Association, who's been in touch with the other organizations as well. We have a firm commitment from those three associations, from me, and from others involved in this, to work on this in the interim. I think if we passed anything today, nothing as a practical matter could be implemented between now and the beginning of the next legislative session, or probably even the end of the next legislative session. But it is my goal, it's my hope to craft, with the input from all these experts on this, a solution to this to bring back at the beginning of the next legislative session, that hopefully we can move on promptly. It would then, in addition, be incumbent, I think, upon all of us, whenever we make public comments with regard to judicial decisions or conduct, that we be careful not to amp it up to the point where it's going to place any of our judicial officers or their staff at risk. We've seen around the country deadly force being used in these contexts, and we will do everything that we can to protect those folks. We just can't get it done right now, right here. That said, as staff was going through the content of these bills, I'd forgotten, as we put everything together piece by piece, how much there is that is worthy will make our public safer, will protect the rights of the people in our society, will keep data carefully protected, will make healthy investments in the safety of our community and in the health of our community and all of its members. I'm incredibly proud of the work that we've done and of my work with our House chairs as well. So thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this. And Chair Becker-Finn, we are going to miss you.
All right, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, and thank you, members. So first, I really want to just thank our staff, knowing that this is over 200 some odd page bill, and to Senator Limmer's point, that we got today. And so it's really difficult. I know that there's discussions done before we got this, and so I really appreciate being on the conference committee. I know that that in the past the minority party hasn't been included, so I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that. I enjoy working with you, Chair Mueller. I know that we don't always agree on things, but I know you to be a fair person, and so I appreciate that. I wouldn't have voted for this bill off the House floor if I didn't believe there were good things in it. But the truth is there are certain provisions that are concerning, not only to us and the minority, but to people who do the job every day. And to Senator Limmer's point, if anyone in the public is watching or listening, this is not normally how this is done. It's not normally, from what I understand, normally we go things with side by sides and see what the Senate does and see what the House did and talk about this and go thing. And I understand we're in a shortened time period. It is not normal, from what the ones I have observed, to simply come to a conference committee with a bill already decided upon. That's not a normal thing. And so it is difficult to what Senator Limmer said. It is difficult to absorb all of this. I mean, the decisions we make in the legislature affect people's lives. And sometimes, especially with public safety, life or death. And so that's why it's so important. There are really good things in here. Thank you for including the therapy dogs. And thank you for including many of the other Republican bills. We know that Representative Nash, Representative Erdahl, I think Representative O'Driscoll was in here, Representative Damuth. I know that there are several provisions in here. Some of the ones that are really concerning are really concerning. And so with that, I appreciate being a part of the process, and I appreciate being able to discuss it, offer the amendments, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, and I first also want to thank our staff in particular. This is sort of, other than my retirement speech, will be like my last time to publicly thank my staff, and I've been incredibly lucky to have Anna Borgerding both as an LA and my committee administrator. as well as Zach and Ella and Ben Johnson, John Walls, our nonpartisan staff. We are incredibly lucky to have the staff that we do. And I decided last night, I will also say this in my retirement speeches, we could as legislators choose to pay them more. We could choose to pay our employees more, and the reality is that employees of the legislature make less than employees in other public service jobs, and that I know it's a political thing, and so we don't always do the right thing, but the right thing would be for these highly skilled folks to be paid adequately for what they do. So to the bill, I think it's overall a really good bill for a supplemental bill. I am thankful that we got the target that we did, particularly the TAILS room, so that we could take care of our interpreters and our examiners and start to deal with that issue. I will say though, and I want to the, you know, sort of the point of just being honest and talking about what is here and what's not here, I am deeply disappointed that the provision around privilege for domestic violence advocates, for community-based advocates, is not in the bill. That was in the House bill. It had, I believe, bipartisan support on the House side. We pay a lot of lip service in both bodies and both parties to caring about victims of crime, and I believe it undermines the work of community-based advocates to not include this provision. It undermines the safety, particularly of women. As I look around this room and I see some faces of folks that I worked with back in my days as a domestic violence prosecutor in DASC, where I worked every single day. My office was next door to those community-based advocates, and I think to not include that provision, there are a few things I feel like I'm leaving on the table walking away from this place, and this is one of those things that I'm really, again, just deeply disappointed that the Senate could not agree to include that this year. And I hope that we will all continue to work on that and think about it and push to make sure that we can pass that next year, because there's no good reason to not have this in the bill, other than the fact that the Senate chair doesn't want it in the bill. And I think that's fair. That's, you know, that is the situation. And I've always done this job and thinking about it as far as, like, the truth is fair game, and that is the truth. The truth is that if it weren't for the Senate, well, this would be in the bill. And I think we gotta work harder on that, and we gotta think about why that is. And I will also say, in the conversations we've had outside of conference committee and in the months leading up to this, some of the conversations we've had with advocates and folks outside this room, the deeply disrespectful things that have been said about victims of violence, particularly women, is just not okay. And it, you know, we may be chairs with gavels who are women who do this work and sit at these tables, but there's still a lot of work to do in the conversations that people are still having and the views that people still have about victims of violence, and particularly domestic violence, and particularly the people who are there to hold their hand and are there to help them get through it. So that's, it's hard to not get that done. And I won't be able to do it, so I need you guys to do it. I need you all to fight for it next year. Thank you, Chair Mueller.
Thank you. I will just say, too, that I am deeply disappointed that the domestic violence privilege is not in this bill as well. This issue, for me, there are very few things we can say at the legislature that we are experts on. And I can, in all honesty, say I am an expert in this area. I went to law school because of gender-based violence. Gender-based violence is a large part of the reason why I ran for office. And in my other job as a prosecutor, I have worked for over a decade, really, on victim privacy issues in particular. And I am well-versed in the case law on this issue and the constitutional issues surrounding it, and am deeply disappointed that this is not in the bill. And I will continue to work hard to fight for this provision in the years to come. I will say, as far as the things that are in the bill that I'm really excited about, this bill builds on the great work that we did last year in the public safety realm, from prevention to rehabilitation to everything in between. And I'm really proud of the work, especially pertaining to victims that are in this bill, the policy provisions, but also the funding. We know that the people who provide services to the victims provide life-saving services to victims and survivors of crime, and they are underfunded. They are losing federal dollars. This is just a temporary Band-Aid for right now, but so it's also an issue that we need to be bring back in future years. But of the about $10 million that we had one-time funding for this year, the fact that we're able to give almost 9.5 of that, I think really reflects our values collectively. I see Representative Mueller nodding. This is bipartisan. We share those values. And so I'm really grateful that we could do that. I'm also just really glad to have the opportunity to work with all of you. And I'm looking forward to getting this bill passed in the final days. Thank you. And also thank you to staff again. I know we keep saying it, but we can't thank you enough. All right. So with that, Senator Latz moves the A2403542 amendment as amended to House File 5216. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. And I direct nonpartisan staff to prepare a conference committee report, and that nonpartisan staff are empowered to make technical and conforming changes of the language approved by this conference committee in order to reflect the intent of this conference committee. Conference committee members, please keep an eye on your email to sign the report when it becomes available. And with that, there is no further business before us, and we are adjourned.